Here the major automatic influences come, as it were, from above. Since the level above is that of abstract thought, the higher astral forms tend to be cleaner, in the artistic, rather than the moral sense, and better organized. Like the astral, the mental plane may be subdivided. The lower mental receives a feedback from the astral, guiding some form to its abstractions. The higher mental is influenced by the spiritual, producing such curious eyes as intuition and certain forms of genius. Readers familiar with occultism may protest that other sources give a different number of astral levels. A sevenfold division is quite popular, especially in the East. But it must be remembered Fitnui Jinglings are arbitrary. They are conveniences, rather than representations of reality. You place them where they do most good to personal understanding. However subdivided, you can see from our new diagram that the road to spiritual potencies lies through the astral plane. The mystic takes a bypass to these heights. The magician, with a different temperament, takes the S6L road. Both are heading for the same destination. Chapter 12 Astral Entities. Carl Jung is somewhere quoted as saying that no one should waste energy denying the existence of the gods when they could be giving their attention to investigating forces which behave exactly as the gods were once reputed to behave. It is good advice and I intend picking to it. I said my little bit for the objective astral in the last chapter. Whether you accept the possibility is your own affair. If, in the present chapter, you prefer low think of spirits as semi-autonomous complexes, that too is your own affair. My concern is purely to describe a few of the entities you may possibly meet on astral wanderings, subjective or objective. First there are the nature spirits. These have been named by folklore and are closely associated with the elements. There are four broad divisions: gnomes, sylphs, salamanders and undines. They are, in the order given, personifications of earth, air, fire and water. Under the same category come elves, spirits, fairies, brownies and Roland's beloved little people, the leprechauns. They are the future expression of natural forces, manifesting as entities of greater or lesser power. The dominant characteristic of these creatures is single-mindedness. Their actions are severely limited to their own concern. Page 88. They are beyond good and evil in the sense that they are neutral. They have totally fixed behavior patterns. Set over the elemental creation are the elemental kings. The inner hierarchy is a reflection of physical facts such as the hurricane's domination of breezes in its path. Since the elemental kings represent the elements in their broader, wilder sense, they are associated with great power, and can be difficult to control. For this reason they tend to be feared in some occult quarters. But their essential nature is still neutral. Only their misdirection will produce evil results. In accordance with the nature of the astral plane, though forms also occur widely, these are mainly very transient, but there are one or two exceptions. Single-minded concentration plus emotion builds up an entity known as an artificial elemental, which reacts according to the nature of the emotion involved. There is usually a feedback proceed to the physical, from an elemental. This is the reason why crowd behavior differs so greatly from the behavior of the individuals who go to make it. A striking example is the lynch mob. The crowd concentrates, with emotion on a single subject, the prisoner. An elemental comes into being and begins a feedback of the hate which produced it. The emotion grows stronger and stronger until it discharges in the murder of the prisoner. Fortunately, the elemental of a loosely knit group like a mob is short-lived. It starves to death when the mob disbands. Given the same basic ingredients, hopefully with a less destructive emotion, an organized group tends to build an elemental with greater emotion, an organized group tends to build an elemental with greater performance. The feeling of awe which clings to an empty cathedral is an example of a powerful elemental built by ritual. The spasmodic aura of art may possibly be the remnant of elemental building in the distant past. Many of these entities are formed quite unconsciously. But a skilled occultist might sometimes use the same ingredients to produce an elemental for some purpose of his own. Again, elemental is neutral per se. By its purpose may be good or evil, depending on the intention of the operator. And its nature may be love or hate, depending on the emotion which gave it birth. Closely associated with futificial elementals are shells. These are forms taken on by independent entities, including humans, in order to operate on the astral, and subsequently discarded. A trained occultist will destroy his shell after use. If he does not, it tends to disintegrate of its own accord. Although giving an immediate appearance of individuality, it is a mindless form and generally quite harmless, although some develop obsessing qualities for a time. Occasionally shells are picked up by sensitives or mediums and mistaken for ghosts. A residue of personality characteristics may give them an appearance of sentience, but any communication with them is flat, colorless and banal. With the shells, there are sometimes actual ghosts. The human personality will usually spend a period on the astral after death. The inner spirit clothes itself in astral substance usually modeled on the physical body and operates temporarily in a dream world. Again, mediumistic contact is possible, and indeed appears quite common. Since the ghost's astral environment is usually built up quite unconsciously and tailored to the individual outlook, descriptions of post-mortem states drawn from these sources tend to vary widely. If a soul does not reincarnate, it will eventually pass beyond this astral dreamland. At that stage, a further interesting possibility arises. If the soul is sufficiently evolved, it can create an astral body to be worked by remote control, as it were. This establishes the possibility of communication with highly evolved entities on the common ground of the astral plane. A standard magical technique is to build a suitable astral form in the hope and expectation of attracting a higher force into it. Since the form can be built from above as well, it is true to say the various angelic and archangelic hierarchies, along with pagan gods and elder brethren of evolution, may also be experienced here. But the plane is not their natural habitat, any more than it is yours or mine. The relevant astral levels can be the key to such curiosities as telepathy. But the establishment of telepathic rapport is on a par with finding a particular stranger in a city the size of Tokyo. It can happen by pure luck, but the chances are all against it. The astral is the home of the mysterious Akashic Record, that mysterious book in which, according to occultists, all facts are written. Why this is so is easy to see when you remember the astral extension through time. The medium takes on an impression of events, so that it is only a question of hitting the right level to produce the relevant information. I rashly wrote only. But, of course, this operation is as tricky as telepathy without training. Probably the easiest tap to TH9 Akashic is through psychometry. To some people, this is a natural aptitude. Others require training. Because of its associations with the astral plane, a simple training system for this talent is given in an appendix. If you have been paying close attention, it may by now have occurred to you that if angels can build astral bodies, so too can demons. Once you abandon superstition and romantic fiction, the problem of the infernal hierarchies becomes quite as difficult to understand as understanding angels. What is worse, investigation of these levels brings painful results. It is as well to leave the demons to Dennis Wheatley and take some consolation from the knowledge that demoniac contact on the future is quite unlikely. Rather more likely, and almost as frightening, is the possibility of contact with one's own archetypes. Confrontation with personified personal unconscious contents can often have a salutary effect. This is one reason why self-knowledge is so important for an astral traveler. It is the ultimate defense against your own worst enemy. Ahit, Chapter 13 Heightening the Astral Experience. Mylarepa, in his Himalayan Cavern and the Anchorites of the Thebaid, followed essentially the same procedure and got essentially the same results. Aldous Huxley Heenondhell. There are, as Huxley discovered, a multitude of ways to heighten the futural experience. Many of them are bizarre, many of them are dangerous. But all of them bear testimony to mankind's fascination with his visions. When using the elemental doorways, members of the Golden Dawn were taught to use certain divine names in order to GTVG their visions life. The names chosen were, in each case, associated with the element concerned. After passing through the doorway, each name associated with the element is sounded three or four times in the order God name, Fush Angel and Angel. The sounding is not done in normal tones. In the election occult of occultism, the names are vibrated. To vibrate a word may take a little practice, but it usually comes easily enough. First speak the word slowly aloud. Then try to produce the same sounds as far back in the throat as possible. This will probably involve dropping the pitch of the voice. The idea is to produce a resonance. An approach midway between singing and chanting may be useful. It is easy to judge when you have succeeded. You will actually feel the resonance. The occultist will often carry his training to the point where he can direct the vibrations to specific areas of his body, the palm of the hand, for instance, or the sole of the foot. But for astral travel, you will need no more than a general vibratory effect. This Golden Dawn technique does not, of course, involve trance. But it is true to say that most other techniques do, to some degree or other. Through a consenting adult, you may take your choice. As someone with a little practical experience, I should underline the fact that trance is not a plaything. If you must risk any of the following, make sure someone is with you all the time. And for preference, make sure that someone is a doctor. A few years ago, scientists working under the auspices of the United States Navy set out to discover the effect on the human mind of total stimulus withdrawal. The first experiments involved shutting volunteers in a lightproof, soundproof room, too small to allow major movement. The walls were padded and the volunteers wore padded clothing, including gloves, to cut down tactile sensation. Later, the procedure involved suspending the volunteers underwater so that the few remaining areas oitically, the slight sensation of the body pressed against th bed, for instance, virtually disappeared. Most of the volunteers followed the same pattern. The only essential difference was the time taken to reach the various stages. First, they would catch up on sleep. Then, sometime after consciousness returned, they would become restless. The restlessness was followed by increasing disorientation. And this finally gave way to hallucinations. For the rest, search for the online PDF book.